Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff, and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about May 16th, 2025. Headline: Hobbs signs utility financing bill. Foes say legal challenge could follow. Written by Reagan Priest and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 14th, 2025. Governor Katie Hobbs signed a controversial utility financing measure into law on May 13th, despite calls for a veto from environmental groups and some Democrats in the legislature. House Bill 2679 allows utility companies to transfer debt into low-interest bonds, which can be sold to recoup funding from aging or inefficient assets in a process known as securitization. The bill was written by Arizona Public Service and given to Republican Representative Gail Griffin, a Republican from Hereford, to sponsor. The legislation has been a point of contention this session and drew the ire of current and former Arizona Corporation Commission members, Attorney General Chris Mays, Senate Minority Leader Priya Sundarajan, and several environmental groups. In a statement released on May 13th, Hobbs said she worked with a bipartisan group of lawmakers on the bill to take it from a concerning piece of legislation to a, quote, common sense, middle-of-the-road solution. Quote, HB 2679 will lower costs for everyday Arizonans, improve grid resiliency by growing our energy economy, and ensure utilities are being held accountable to deliver cost savings to Arizonans, Hobbs said. I heard the concerns from clean energy and consumer protection advocates who opposed the original version of the bill, and I made it better. The bill has been a headache for lawmakers since it was introduced in January. It first received pushback from the All-Republican Corporation Commission in February after commissioners said they were not part of the drafting process and were not made aware of the bill until it was filed. In early March, the ACC voted to make its position on the bill neutral, with several commissioners expressing frustration with APS and Republican lawmakers for not consulting with them prior to filing the legislation. A few weeks later, former Corporation Commission Chairman Bob Burns, a Republican, sent a letter to lawmakers urging them to hold the bill until the ACC could conduct an evidentiary hearing on securitization. In early April, Mays, a former commission chair, sent a letter to lawmakers saying she believed the bill could violate the ACC's constitutional authority to set utility rates. Despite the backlash, lawmakers pushed forward on the bill and added significant amendments to it in both the House and the Senate. Opponents say the changes made were good, but still do not provide enough oversight of the securitization process and do not ensure that utility companies cannot securitize coal plants which remain in operation. Amendments to the bill resolved some sticking points by removing the ability to securitize unrecovered fuel costs and limiting securitization to utility infrastructure in use at the time of the bill's passage. Sundarajan said she felt, quote, extreme disappointment with the governor for signing the bill because of all the concerns brought to her office and the rushed legislative process the measure went through. Quote, the plant that this seems to be intended to allow APS to securitize isn't even scheduled for retirement for a number of years, Sundarajan said, referring to the Four Corners power plant in New Mexico. Quote, there's time in which we could have gotten this right. The rush to sign HB 2679 is really inexplicable. May's spokesperson, Richie Taylor, said the Attorney General still has concerns about the bill's constitutionality, despite Republican lawmakers claiming amendments had resolved those issues. Quote, once the ACC greenlights a bond's terms, it cannot later modify how those bond changes are passed on to customers, Taylor said in a statement. This effectively hinders future commissions from performing their core regulatory duties over utilities, and HB 2679 enables ratepayer subsidization of utilities' unprofitable investments by allowing a utility to sell a power plant once ratepayers have paid its remaining book value, letting the utility keep all the sale proceeds. The ACC has the exclusive authority to set utility rates under the state constitution, and the legislature cannot modify that authority. A spokesperson for the ACC did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the commission's current position on the bill. Sudarshan said, opponents may challenge the legislation in court or ask Mays to formally weigh in on its legality, but no concrete plans have been formed yet. The signing also comes after reporting from Capital Media Services found APS's parent company, Pinnacle West, donated $100,000 to a secretive legal defense fund Hobbs used to win election challenges from her former gubernatorial opponent, Carrie Lake. Pinnacle West also donated $250,000 to Hobbs' inauguration fund in 2023, and recent campaign finance reports show a $5,800 donation from the company's PAC to Hobbs' campaign in January. Not everyone was disappointed with the bill, though. The Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry called it a huge win for Arizona ratepayers in a post on X on May 13th. Griffin, the bill's sponsor, also celebrated the passage in a statement released on May 14th. Quote, by leveraging innovative financing tools, Arizona's investor-owned utilities like APS and TEP and public power entities like SRP and AEPCO and rural electric cooperatives can lower consumer costs and free up capital to invest in new energy-generating resources and grid updates, Griffin said. Quote, it's a smart, forward-looking way to ensure Arizona's utilities can keep up with rising demands. Headline, Governor Hobbs approves cryptocurrency regulation and reserve fund. Written by Jamar Younger and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 16, 2025. Governor Katie Hobbs signed a bill on May 7th that will allow the state to establish a cryptocurrency reserve fund and account for unclaimed digital currency assets. The bill was one of a series of cryptocurrency measures Hobbs signed into law that aim to establish a regulatory framework and address the virtual currency's growing use among individuals and businesses. The other laws include regulating cryptocurrency ATM operators to protect users from scams and prohibit municipalities from regulating computational power in a home. Representative Jeff Weniger, a Republican from Chandler, introduced the legislation that will update the state's unclaimed property laws to include cryptocurrency and to create a Bitcoin and digital assets reserve fund for investments returns on the currency. The state treasurer would be able to deposit 10% of digital assets into the state general fund upon the legislative approval. The law will allow abandoned digital assets to be delivered to the Department of Revenue in their native form instead of being liquidated and sent there as money. Quote, this law ensures Arizonans don't leave value sitting on the table and puts us in a position to lead the country in how we secure, manage, and ultimately benefit from abandoned digital currency, Weniger said in a press release on May 7th after the bill was signed. The law establishes a baseline for a state-level reserve with the seized digital assets, said Stephen Cole, founder and CEO of Orchestra, a company that builds software to help businesses establish and manage Bitcoin treasuries. Cole said he would like the law expanded to allow the state to invest more in digital assets. Quote, I would love to see Arizona do even more, because the limitation on the bill is that it doesn't really allow investment managers of public funds to decide how much of it is appropriate for the state to invest, Cole said. It's really just a function of how much property happens to have been seized, and so I think that we will see Other states allow their investment managers to make strategic allocations to this as they follow the market, see more institutional validation, and comfort with this asset. Although the law received bipartisan support as it passed through the legislature, some Democrats opposed the legislation, saying current laws already account for unclaimed digital assets. Senator Mitzi Epstein, a Democrat from Tempe, said this law will prop up the digital price of digital currencies, such as Bitcoin. Quote, if they can convince enough legislators in states to create Bitcoin reserves, then those will help prop up the price of Bitcoin, and that's foolish, because we should not be in the business of propping up the price of anything. That's picking winners and losers, Epstein said. Epstein is skeptical of cryptocurrency because she views it as a volatile investment, she said. Quote, it is as close to a Ponzi scheme as you can get without it being a Ponzi scheme, she said. Epstein supported another recently signed law that regulated cryptocurrency ATM operators. Representative David Marshall, a Republican from Snowflake, introduced the bill after hearing of scams targeting senior citizens. The law would establish requirements for operators to disclose terms and conditions associated with the operator and virtual currency, provide receipts for each transaction, and allow 72 hours for users to receive a fund. It would also prohibit an operator from accepting more than $2,000 in one day from a new customer. Marshall said at a March 26th Senate Judiciary Elections Committee hearing that he invests in cryptocurrency and knows the market could confuse some people. Quote, if you're not familiar with it, you're easily defrauded, especially if you're a senior citizen, Marshall said at the hearing. Cole said establishing a clear regulatory framework is the best way to counter scams. However, he said, those incidents shouldn't deter the state from embracing the cryptocurrency when it is rapidly growing. Quote, those who are late to adopt and who are kind of dragged along into this, they'll still get there, but they will miss out on a lot of opportunity, he said. You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline: Arizona PBS pledges to protect Arizona Horizon despite Trump's threats to funding. Written by Reagan Priest and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 17, 2025. Arizona PBS is vowing to protect and strengthen its nightly news show amid federal funding cuts that have been ordered by President Donald Trump. Quote, Arizona Horizon is a go-to stop for any politician, candidate, or consultant looking to spread their message to the public. But its host, Arizona PBS, could be in jeopardy after Trump signed an executive order on May 1st instructing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to cease funding PBS and NPR. Scott Wolfel, the station's general manager, said viewers shouldn't expect any immediate changes to Horizon while PBS explores legal options and outside fundraising sources to backfill the federal funding, which accounts for about 13% of AZPBS's budget. Quote, Horizon is going to continue, and as a matter of fact, we want to expand it and do more under the Horizon brand, Wolfel said. So if we lose this federal funding, we'll be making some other changes elsewhere in the organization. Attorney General Chris Mays has filed several lawsuits against the Trump administration over its revocation of federal funds from different government entities, but a spokesperson declined to comment on a potential lawsuit over CPB funding. Mays, a former journalist and frequent Horizon guest, did provide a statement in support of the show. Quote, as someone who has appeared on Arizona Horizon for years, first as a journalist and now as Arizona's Attorney General, I know firsthand the critical role it plays in informing the public, Mays said, and it helps hold the public officials accountable through thoughtful, fact-based dialogue and rigorous debate and in-depth conversations about issues that really matter to Arizonans. For decades, Horizon has interviewed and provided debate platforms for Arizona's biggest political names on both sides of the aisle. Even in 2025, with trust in media at an all-time low and partisanship at an all-time high, the show has managed to host roundtables with bipartisan elected officials, interviews with both of Arizona's United States senators, and discussions with Republican leaders in the legislature. Woeful attributes the influence of Horizon, at least partially, to its host, Ted Simons. Simons, who has served as the show's host since 2007, declined to be interviewed for this story. Quote, "People know when they come on that Simons will be fair, and that the questions will be balanced," Woeful said. "They'll be the things that people want to know. It's not going to be sensational." Chuck Coughlin, CEO of High Ground Public Affairs, is another frequent guest on Horizon, and also attributed its popularity to Simons and his interview style. Quote, "Even Carrie Lake goes there because that's where the debates are, and I didn't hear anybody after any of those debates, on the right or the left, say that they got gamed in the debate," Coughlin said. "They legitimately try and do a fair and unbiased job of letting the candidates speak to the issues, and in many cases, forcing them to speak to the issues." Coughlin pointed out that debates hosted by Horizon and moderated by Simons and other journalists are often the only debate in many local and statewide races, giving the show a crucial role in informing the state's voters about elections that impact them most. Quote, "It would be a loss of transparency," Coughlin said, "if AZPBS were to suffer financially, our political culture would suffer." While candidates could go to other stations like 12 News, ABC 15, or Fox 10, Coughlin said Horizon's ability to dive deep on the issues in longer segments creates a, quote, "more mature political conversation for those in the know." Quote, "It's just a healthy place to have a discussion," Coughlin said, "and a lot of people in our industry and in our elected universe pay attention to them. They say the New York Times is the paper of record. I would say that Arizona PBS is the electronic medium of record for Arizona politics." While AZPBS waits for more clarity on its funding situation, Woeful said fans of Horizon and PBS in general can donate to the station or learn more online about how to support public media. He said the station has already received an outpouring of support in the weeks following Trump's executive order. Quote, "In the last couple months, every time I've said what I do, everybody says, 'Oh, I heard about the funding fight. We love you. We're pulling for you.' All kinds of stuff," Woeful said. So there's a lot of broad public support. Headline: No progress on state budget amid Prop 123 hangup. Written by Jacob Thorington and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 16, 2025. Republicans at the legislature have addressed most of the bills that they wanted to take on this session, but budget discussions are stalled until lawmakers find an agreement on a Proposition 123 ballot referral. Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Senator John Kavanaugh, a Republican from Fountain Hills, told the Arizona Capital Times that House and Senate Republicans have reached a budget agreement, but haven't discussed the budget with Governor Katie Hobbs or her staff yet. Quote, "She has been refusing to meet with us since the beginning of the session and said she will not meet until Prop 123 is passed, which is unprecedented," Kavanaugh said. With most of the legislative business finished for the session, Republican leaders in both chambers took a mid-session break amid discussions on the education funding ballot referral. House members are scheduled to return to the floor on May 20th, and the Senate will gavel back in on May 28th, leaving lawmakers slightly more than a month to get a budget to Hobbs before the end of the fiscal year on June 30th. After both chambers went on their break on May 7th, Hobbs spokesman Christian Slater called on legislative Republicans to publicly present their budget. Quote, "It's shameful that Republican lawmakers are going on vacation instead of taking action to fund public education and passing a bipartisan balanced budget. Everyday Arizonans don't get to give themselves 2 weeks off from their job. Their inaction is a dereliction of their duty to serve the public and an affront to the students, parents, and teachers across Arizona who want stability and certainty, Slater said in a statement. Republicans must show Arizonans their budget plan rather than skipping work for a mid-session vacation. Kavanaugh said he's flabbergasted with how Hobbs has approached the budget this year and said the only reason the chambers have gone on break is because the bills are mostly finished, but the governor's office, quote, doesn't want to talk. Quote, if you're going to do political spin, at least make it believable and credible, Kavanaugh said. Chuck Coughlin, a political consultant and the CEO of High Ground Consulting, says he believes the lack of communication on the budget reflects the state of partisanship between Republicans and Democrats on the national level. Quote, there's a lot of blame going around on both sides of an equation like that, Coughlin said. That's disappointing because everyone is elected to represent the people of Arizona, and that requires talking and getting along. Despite the lack of movement, both Coughlin and Kavanaugh said they weren't worried about the budget being settled before the end of the fiscal year. Quote, we could knock the budget out in a few days, Kavanaugh said. Mid-session breaks at the legislature have become a common occurrence in recent years. Last year, both chambers operated with a schedule that had House and Senate members adjourning once a week in April and May before getting the budget passed on June 15th. In 2023, lawmakers took several breaks before adjourning sine die on July 31st, although Hobbs signed that year's budget in May. The legislature has historically used a much more public process to create the budget. That process involved the legislative budget staff proposing a plan shortly after the executive proposal in January. Past sessions also held regular appropriations subcommittee hearings related to state agencies and the budget. Quote, that doesn't happen anymore, Coughlin said. They get into these very small rooms with leadership and a few other people, and they take it back to their caucus and try to muscle it through. That's just not a healthy way to do business. A whole process has been broken for some time, and I'm sure the governor is frustrated about that. Slater accused Republicans of hiding their budget and holding education funding hostage with Proposition 123. Quote, they need to come clean and show Arizonans their secret budget and work on a bipartisan Prop 123 ballot referral to fund public education, Slater wrote in a text to the Arizona Capital Times on May 13th. Headline, triple homicide in state prison prompts legislators probe. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 16, 2025. A triple murder at a state prison in Tucson in April prompted a probe from two lawmakers and reinvigorated the conversation around a proposal for an independent oversight body for the Arizona Department of Corrections. On April 4th, Ricky Wassenaar, a man serving 16 consecutive life sentences, was named as the sole suspect in a triple homicide at Arizona State Prison Complex in Tucson. Wassenaar was under a close custody, a step down from the maximum security classification. In the aftermath, the department pledged greater security measures with a response plan currently in the works with the governor's office. But Representative Quang Nguyen, chair of the House Judiciary Committee, and Senator Kevin Payne, chair of the Senate Public Safety Committee, still had their concerns, prompting two letters to ADCRR Director Ryan Thornell with questions, requests for information and documents on custody levels, staffing, inmate discipline, and Wassenaar's prior behavior. As the two lawmakers sift through information and wait for further answers from the department, concerns regarding custody security levels and staffing persist and could manifest as an amendment to a bill creating an office to monitor and report on the Department of Corrections. Quote, we put people in prison to punish them for the crimes that they've committed, but we shouldn't be putting people in there so that they can be killed, Nguyen said. That's not how the correction system should work. Nguyen asked for a copy of the department's internal review or post-incident report, all protocols surrounding high-risk inmate monitoring and movement, a record of Wassenaar's threatening behavior toward staff and other inmates, and an explanation of each resolution and overview of the disciplinary procedures when an inmate harms another while in custody. Payne requested a timeline of events, any reports regarding Wassenaar's desire to harm others, his security classification, and prior criminal record. He also asked for a comprehensive list of policy changes made under Thornell, current staffing levels in the unit where the murder occurred, comparative staffing levels from 2 years prior, and full staffing rosters before and after the incident. Nguyen and Payne met with Thornell in early May, armed with those questions. Quote, "There are a lot of answers, but we have not received the answers to the full question asked in the letter," Nguyen said. Nguyen said his main question continues to be, quote, "What about common sense? Do you really want a guy that's willing to go out and kill people within the general population?" In a statement, the department confirmed the meeting and said Thornell has already responded to Payne's requests for information and plans to respond in writing to Nguyen. Quote, "The meetings went well, and Director Thornell shared transparent details around the topics and incidents that they were interested in," the statement read. Payne did not respond to requests for comment or a copy of the department's response. The Department of Corrections declined to share its response. Public records requests at both the legislature and the department are pending. Nguyen said he is waiting for the written response from the department, with the potential to bring the issue up in a House or ad hoc committee if necessary. Quote, "If I'm not getting the answers that I'm looking for, then it's better for me to call a public hearing," Nguyen said. Beyond the department, Nguyen said that he is also interested in insight from the staff and its meeting with former corrections employees to gain further insight into policies or custody classifications and how it manifests on the ground. He stressed the need for a conversation on policy change to prevent a similar incident in the future, and he and Payne may have a way to do that this session. Senator Shauna Bolock, a Republican from Phoenix, sponsored Senate Bill 1507, which establishes the Independent Correctional Oversight Office and charges the office with monitoring conditions of confinement, investigating complaints, providing information on inmates' rights, and submitting annual reports to the legislature. Quote, "In light of the incident in Tucson a few weeks ago, with the deaths of various inmates, I can tell you that more people are paying attention to this bill," Bolock said. Senate Bill 1507 is one of several attempts to create an independent body to oversee and report on the Department of Corrections, and in this session, it's got momentum with near-unanimous support in both chambers. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you for listening.